Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Drive Through HR, and this is William Tincup. We are without Brian and Nisha today, but we are going to marshal on. We are going to carry on without them and have a fantastic show because we absolutely love our guest. And without any further ado, let's get right into it. Michelle, if you'd do us a favor and introduce yourself, tell us who you are.
Certainly, William. My name is Michelle Todzi. I am the Vice President of Human Resources for Trudell Holdings. We are a holding company that owns 4 semi-trailer dealers in the Midwest, primarily with the Great Dane brand. And then we have a school bus dealership, a Bluebird dealership down in the Madison, Wisconsin area. I work out of our corporate headquarters in the Green Bay area. Go Packers, even though it's off-season, it's always Packer season up here. And we have about 150 employees. I've been doing HR for 17 years or so, the last 6 of it here.
Fantastic. And what is keeping you up at night, or what's top of mind for you these days?
You know, for me, what's keeping me up or invading my dreams, as it happens to be, I have no problem sleeping. I have 2 young kids, so sleep isn't a problem. But what invades my dreams is the speed of change these days. There is a lot going on in the HR world, especially as a HR generalist in a smaller organization. My staff, it's just me and 1 HR coordinator, and we do everything HR. So we are true generalists, including payroll, safety, all those things. So, you know, some of the changes imposed on us, for example, healthcare reform is taking up a great deal of my time, and how do we structure our benefits and our wellness programming to be compliant and effective? Some of it self-inflicted, frankly. We're looking at a new ERP system this year. We're making a change as an organization. We continue looking at acquisitions. I'm changing 401k plan record keepers over the summer. So as I said, some of it's self-inflicted. There's a lot of balls up in the air right now.
Do you find that, so from a change perspective, do you find that it's technology is helping you, or is technology, specifically the HR technology world, is it kind of in the way because you don't know necessarily what you should buy, how to buy, and all that stuff? Like, where does technology and change kind of mix in with one another?
You know, for us, technology isn't one of our strong suits. And I think that's part of the reason why we're looking at an ERP change. The system that we have is specific to the type of business that we have, and we have a very old version of it. So we're really jumping actually several years into the future and in this getting current with this change. From an HR perspective, I'm fortunate enough to work with one of the major players, outsourcers from a payroll and HRIS perspective, and that's actually been helpful, especially when it comes to some of these changes we've been talking about on the HR side with the healthcare reform. I can pull a census report and not have to go to a spreadsheet of information or people's paper files. I have it out there in a system, so that's been very helpful. I'm looking forward to a year, 2, 3 down the road when we're well into this new ERP system, which is going to coordinate with our HR systems, and being able to see what other kind of information we can pull out and what kind of decisions we can make on those. There isn't that connection right now.
It's funny. I do a bit on user adoption, and it's usually about 20 slides. And I have 1 on change management, right? But really the entire presentation could be about change management. And and one of the things that I say to folks, I'm like, the only constant is change. And in fact, there's always something being changed. And how do you get to understand or kind of unravel who in the organization can consume change and who can't? Like, you know, you have the technology adoption lifecycle, where you have people that are early adopters, and on the other end of that, you have people that are laggards, very simplistically. But, like, you have a whole 150 employees. Amongst them, you have people that will consume change easily, actually. As much as you throw at them, they'll consume it. And then you have a group of people that no matter what you do, they will fight you tooth and nail on any change. How do you get to know who those folks are? And programmatically, how do you get them over the hump?
You know, this is the benefit of working in a smaller organization is I personally know many of our employees, not all of them, because we've gone through a growth spurt recently and I haven't been out to the branches as of late. But, you know, we know our people and we know them really well. Some of our locations, there's only 14 people who work there regularly. Our largest one is here and we have about 60. So it's really easy to know people and who they are and what motivates them. And unfortunately, because we have such a large component of our staff who've been with us a very long time, the company has been around for almost 42 years, and we have folks, probably 15% of our employees have more than 25 years of experience with the organization. So, you know, the fact that we know who these people are makes it a little bit easier because we know each other. We're kind of like family. I really think it gets down to answering the what's in it for them. Don't we talk about that all the time? What's in it for me at that radio station? This is how your job's going to be easier. This is how I can make this process more enjoyable. You know, we have the complaint about this. Well, this is one way to address that complaint or issue that we have. And then just repetition. And it's a long process. This ERP system thing we announced 9 months before we go live. And then just kind of walking people through each step of the way. And sometimes it's just an email and people are cool. Other people, you go and you sit down and you visit with them and you talk about their family. And then you get around to the part where, okay, now we need to do this. I think we're going a little too fast for some of our employees right now. And I can see that in some of the issues that people are starting to raise. And of course, being in HR, anybody else out there listening who are in that day-to-day trench HR type of a role, you hear the complaints. You know, the last couple of weeks, all of a sudden, we've had a complaint about the soap in the ladies' room and the paper toweling in the restrooms and the coffee pot being left on at the end of the day. And, you know, it's annoying for sure, but I think it's symptomatic of maybe people are starting to feel a little bit out of control. And this is one way of trying to take back some of that control or expressing that they're feeling out of control.
That's actually really unique. I don't think anybody's really talked about the relationship between morale and change. And where else have you kind of seen that, not only just in your professional career, but just seen that kind of play out? Where if you're consuming a whole bunch of change, maybe morale, I don't know if what the relationship is or should be, but maybe what there is a relationship between those two.
There probably is some relationship there. We have a lot of new folks as well, so we get some of that new folks or that new group, the newbies, against the I've been here half of forever, don't get in my way, people, and managing through that a little bit.
Do you see a difference between frontline employees and management? Do you see any differences in the way that they consume change?
You know, I have to say, I just got done saying we know our people, and I know a lot of them. But because I don't work with so many of my employees on a day-to-day basis, I don't feel like I have a good grasp on that as I should. We rely so much on our middle management, our service managers, our parts managers, those folks, kind of that frontline supervisors in, you know, the two-way communication, stuff going down from us. So it's not from, oh, it's coming from corporate, but it's coming from your manager, and then vice versa to make sure that those managers are raising it up to the leadership team so we know it needs to be addressed. So I guess I don't have a really good answer for that, William.
No worries. What's your kind of favorite way to communicate change? Like not just, you know, what you've seen other people do and kind of like how do you like to communicate change that's coming down the pipeline?
I think in person, face-to-face. We employ a great deal of different media to get our message across because we're geographically dispersed. We have a location in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We have down in the Milwaukee area. Here we have the bus company down in Madison. We have a couple facilities in the Twin Cities area of Minnesota. So we do a lot of email. We do the old-fashioned payroll stuffers for our mechanics, bulletin boards. I even have some of the spouses on an email list to communicate with the family members. But there's nothing better than getting out in front of folks and sitting down and having a meeting or talking about an issue over pizza at lunch, that kind of thing. So when I have something big, I usually try to go out and visit with the facility. You know, I'll have my investment advisor or our financial advisor for the 401k plan. We'll do a road trip this summer before the record keeper change, and we'll get everybody in a room and we'll talk about, here's who we're going to, this is why we're doing this, here are some questions, answers to some of the questions you're going to have. And then my broker on the health insurance will be out and about come October talking about our new benefit plan and how healthcare reform is going to impact that and the decisions they have to make between staying on our plan or potentially checking out these exchanges that may or may not be available come January 1st of 2014. So I have one of those weird situations with the three states. I've got one of each. The governor of Wisconsin has said, nope, the feds can run the exchange. Minnesota's doing a state exchange, and Michigan's doing a partnership. So it'll be a very customized message when we do our road trip.
Nice. Let's talk a little bit about training. What's the role of training as it relates to change and change management in particular? Like, how should we, in a perfect world, let's go there, how should we train folks?
Boy, you're hitting me with a hard one. We do, like, no training here, or very little training. So much of it's on the job, word of mouth, very informal, short of the required safety things that we have to do. I don't know that we've really looked at utilizing training as part of the change management process at all. So I'm not sure.
Well,
again,
I'll
I'm not
help
sure how
you
to answer.
In a perfect world, again, perfect world, unlimited budget, the best way to train is to meet the user where they are. So if they're an iPad person and they need their training delivered there, either via video or narrative, et cetera, you meet them where they are, which means that we go to great lengths to learn their particular learning styles and what they'll consume. Because where training typically fails, not just in change management, but just in general, is where we try to train them on a learning style that doesn't work for them. So,
exactly.
So that's one of the things that I would suggest, that if you dip your toe into the training world, start with finding out how people like to learn. What are your particular learning differences, i.e. dyslexia and things of that nature, but also what's your learning style. You know, again, I'm going to give you a bunch of heavy narrative. If you can't read because you're dyslexic, great. So that doesn't work. But, yeah, that's one way to go about it. Again, perfect world, unlimited budget, et cetera. Let me ask you a quick question about metrics. Like, roll this up into the two or three things that you really care about. What are the numbers when you look across your universe? You're kind of keeping the finger on the pulse of what type of numbers?
Obviously, for us, we're looking at, as a company, profitability numbers, margin. We don't make anything. So obviously, we're a distributor, so we are profitable based on the margin. So that's a number that we watch. We're not a heavily metric organization at all, you know, so I keep a pulse on turnover and things like that for when it does get to be a problem. You know, it rears its head from time to time. It's not generally something we struggle with on a regular basis. Those are probably the two biggies. We watch efficiencies, mechanic efficiencies, very carefully. Our folks out in the shop, their incentive is based it's a gain share type situation based on mechanic bill rate efficiencies and things like that. So that's really what we watch, those type of things more than anything else. So obviously,
right.
from an HR perspective, that means we need to make sure that we're doing what we need to do not to stand in the way or to facilitate those processes so they can be more efficient, so that we can make more money on that trailer sales and those type of things. So again,
right.
getting back to the meetings, that's not billable time, so you have to be respectful of how much you're pulling people off the floor.
Let me ask, because you've worked on both sides, the internal and also in the outsourcing world a little bit, what do you think we should consider outsourcing and what should never be outsourced? Like, regardless of large company, small company, whatever industry that one is, like, what should we always hold dear and core, and what's okay to outsource?
Oh, goodness. I would never, ever do payroll in-house again, ever. So, again... We contract with one of the biggies. Everybody knows who they are from the payroll tax payment, you know, payroll tax payment, all that stuff. Our former president asked the CFO and I one time, well, when should we look at bringing payroll in-house? And we both looked at him and said, absolutely never. They've been great. You know, as all of these changes have come, reporting on W-2s, I know it's going to be there. It's built, the system. I would never do payroll in-house again. It had my druthers. We outsource our COBRA. I'm perfectly comfortable with that, again, because the regulations keep changing. Having somebody who stays on top of that and knows what they're doing is a great help. We outsource our flex spending as well. Those are things I would more than happy take off the plate. I would never outsource employee relations. We had an organization here in the Green Bay area who went to a call center HR type of a thing, and a rather large organization at that. So they didn't really have employee relations, HR business partner folks on staff in this location, and I found that very odd. How do you keep a pulse on your employees and that morale? And people don't want to call an 800 number when they're having a personal issue. They want to come sit and cry in your office and get it off their chest. And hopefully you have tools and resources to help them move forward. But that's hard to do over a phone, to show that empathy and compassion over the phone.
Yeah, it's interesting. Of course, my mind goes automatically to harassment issues. And it's like, I think sometimes people don't report harassment because of its highly personal nature. And they don't want, not just the fear of backlash and all the other stuff, but, you know, coming into that room and having that type of conversation is extremely hard and difficult, humiliating, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a 1-800 number, maybe that's easier. I don't know, but. That's really interesting. I'd like to actually explore that at one point. Big data. A lot of vendors talk about big data. It is the topic du jour. I think we can make a drinking game out of it. When you hear big data, what do you automatically think of when you hear the concept of big data?
Oh, we're not there yet. It's another one of those, it sounds really good in theory, but you need to know what you're doing for it to really be useful. And I think there are a lot of folks out there who think they're doing big data or heading in that direction, and maybe not so much. I kind of know we, the organization I work for, we're not there. We don't have the resources. We don't have the tools. And quite frankly, the management team doesn't have an interest in being there yet. So
yeah, it's funny.
Go ahead.
It's funny. I was just thinking that years ago, I used to do a bunch of like Salesforce rollouts, Salesforce.com rollouts, and we'd consult. And the number one reason a Salesforce.com rollout would fail is whether or not you have executive buy-in or not. And so, like, I mean, I think it's true of pretty much anything. When your executive team is on board, turns out it usually kind of gets rolled out and people adopt it. When they're not on board, sometimes it's successful in spite of them, but more often than not, it just kind of gets squandered. And so I think you're right. And until the executive team says, you know, this big data stuff, there's probably some hidden things that would really help our unlock some things for our business. Let's get on board with this. Until they're on board, it probably won't be helpful.
And that's why I don't track as much data or measure as many things as I think some of my peers do, because my management team just honestly doesn't care. It would just be time spent and work done with no payoff, and I don't have time for that.
Yeah, truth, right? Like you're manufacturing more time. During pre-show, you said something that's really interesting. You called yourself a reformed perfectionist, and just a thought on our profession and the world that we love. Do you think that there's a lot of folks that work in HR that are reformed perfectionists, and is that a good thing or a bad thing, etc.?
I think there are still several HR folks who are still trying to be the perfectionist and maybe haven't made that transition to reformed yet. Early in my career, and maybe a little bit before I made the move fully to HR, it was hard to come to decisions because you feel like you have to gather all of this information because you have to be right the first time out. And one thing I had to learn in the business world is sometimes you have to make a decision on the information you have now, and you make the best decision that you can. You might be right. You might be wrong. You might be partially right, but there's always that room for the continuous improvement, or there's almost always time for that continuous improvement. So that's why I call myself a reformed. I do think there are a lot of folks in our profession who are that way. I think there are more that need to go that way. We get so wrapped up in, well, the law says this and this black and white, and yet we deal with people. We're about people, and people aren't black and white. So you have to live in the gray. And I think there are too many people. I don't want to be known as a compliance person. That's not my thing. It's part of what I do, keep my company out of trouble. But looking at each situation unique, because each person is unique, and say, what's the best thing, the best decision for everybody involved? And that's a growth process for HR folks. There's still a lot of them out there really tied up on the black and white. This is what the policy says. This is what the law says. And haven't grown to the point where they can put those pieces together and say, but in this situation, we're going to.
How did you build your own instincts, like that gut, that instincts? And how do you think we should build that with our employees?
That's a really good question. I was fortunate in my career because I've worked mostly for smaller organizations. And when I say smaller, I'm like 600 employees or less, with the exception of one or two. I've had a lot of exposure to senior management, even from the very beginning, you know, owners, direct reports to owners, and just really paying attention to how they made decisions. At what point did they pull the trigger? And being aware, being what was going on around me, and really patterning my responses and my thought process off of some of that. I'm a huge reader, and the business books and things like that, just getting exposed to a lot of different ideas helps with that as well. And maybe that's what we need to do with our employees, you know, get them out of that tunnel vision. This is what I do. This is my box. And expanding those horizons, introducing them to other parts of the organization. I've always been a big believer, you need to know what the people feeding your position are all about, and where does your stuff go, and how does what you do impact them, so you get that bigger picture. I think it makes it easier then to draw those connections and make those decisions and know when you can say, this is good enough, this will meet my needs.
While we're on that, what type of content is inspirational for you, and what type of content do you not like, do you not find yourself consuming?
these days, I love following the HR bloggers. I try to spend a couple minutes every day on Twitter, going out, and there's a few of my faves that I have. I try to catch every day. The Cynical Girl, Lori Rudiman's, HR Capitalist, some of those. These days, though, I'm really into some more broader things. My faith has taken a bigger role in my life the last few years. So right now I'm working on a book, reading a book called Magnetic Christianity, and just how do I be the best person I can be and live my faith in the, you know, and expand, I don't know, how do I describe that? Just use my talents to the better of society.
Nice. Is it non-denominational?
It is. It was written, it's written by a Catholic author. I'm Catholic. His name is Gus Lloyd. But it's really meant from a non-denominational Christian. You don't have to be Catholic to really get anything out of it. It's called Magnetic Christianity, and just using your God-given gifts to build the kingdom. But you can take the religion piece out of it and say, how do I use my gifts, however I got them, to better society in general, and remembering what that means.
That's cool. My wife is godly, and so I'll look that up for her. I got to ask you about conferences real quick. We've got about 3 minutes left in the show, and for a person like you, in where you're at in your career and the things that you've learned, you know, conferences kind of can help you at different stages, and so, you know, everyone needs something different out of a conference, etc. But take us into, what do you need? Let's say you did go to some conferences in 13 or maybe even 14. What do you really need from a conference for it to work?
For me, part of it is getting my SPHR credit, so I tend to gravitate towards those that are going to need that because I don't want to take that test again. But The new ideas, what's new, what's different. I live the FMLA. I've seen the FMLA. I really don't need another FMLA update. I'm sure there are people in their career who do, my assistant being one of them. You know, she's new in her HR career, and those kind of things are great for her. I went to the local SHRM half-day legislative update, you know, and a lot of it is just review. Yep, I know what I'm doing. There's a little bit new there, but, you know, just to stay on top of the compliance things. But for me, for the conferences, I'm looking at the what's new, what's next, what should be on my radar screen. Maybe some of the bigger companies are doing it. Eventually it'll get here. I like to know about it early so that I can be in front of it rather than playing catch up. I had planned to go to the national SHRM conference this year, but with all of the activity going on, I just can't make it happen this year. I decided and said that my time out of the office was going to be dedicated to hanging out with my family. We have two different weeks scheduled for vacation this summer. And we're taking the kids to Disney. So I couldn't be at the SHRM conference 1 week and in Florida the next week and still survive.
Yeah, truth. Well, the good news is next year's SHRM annual is in Orlando. So you can kind of kill two birds with one stone right there, ladies and gentlemen. Boom. You can just get both of them taken care of. Listen, we've got a wonderful call. I want to thank everyone for listening to Drive Through HR. Michelle, of course, it's always wonderful to talk to you, hear your voice, and get your insights. And because you are a child of the 80s, we are going to go out to a little Rush, not my favorite band. Everyone have a wonderful afternoon, and thanks again for listening.